really went after my intelligence there. Dozens of online IQ tests might prove you wrong, but... And my thing isn't tiny, it's average, so... Get your facts straight.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Weiss here with you. My co-host Ethan is still out going through some life-changing experiences. I'll let him fill you guys in when he gets back. Before we get into breaking down the Giants' big win over the Houston Texans, I want to point out that the show is sponsored by Mojo. How would you like to invest in your favorite players like Saquon Barkley or Daniel Jones? Well, now you can with Mojo. Mojo has over 300 NFL players listed, so you can invest in rookies like Kenneth Walker, who is the front runner for the Offensive Rookie of the Year, or Christian Watson, who had a breakout game against the Dallas Cowboys last Sunday. Or you can invest in superstars like Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, or even Justin Jefferson, who made a hell of a catch last Sunday against the Bills. Prices move with every play, every game, and every headline. And you can buy and sell instantly anytime, all year long, so the action never, ever stops. Mojo is live in New Jersey now. Download the Mojo app in the Apple App Store today and start turning playmakers into moneymakers. You must be 21 or older to use the Mojo app and is located in New Jersey to make trades. Have a gambling problem? Help is available. 1-800-GAMBLER. Visit mojo.com for more info.
Meanwhile, you guys met him last week, but I got my producer Nick here to break down the Texans game. Nick, Giants, they take care of business against the Houston Texans, 24-16. What are your thoughts?
Very professional win. There's no other way to describe it. Most teams in this league, one, two bad possessions away from losing most games. The Giants have been that team that finds a way to lose these kinds of games the last couple of years. They went into that game. They didn't play particularly well in the first half, only 7-3 at the half, even though they probably should have been up probably at least 10 if they get a few extra field goal there when they should have went for it on that short, then they had the penalty or whatever. Took care of business. It wasn't pretty. It's hard for this team to win games pretty the way they're constructed. They ran the ball down Houston's throat and said, stop us, and Houston couldn't stop them. Not much more to say. This was as solid a victory as they've had this year. Never really in doubt.
Yeah, I think this was it's a prime definition of taking care of business. Yeah. Like at no point in this game, I don't know about you, but at no point did I think the Giants are going to lose this game. I thought they had a good handle of the Texans' offense. I know Damian Pierce, you know, had some big runs and had a good statistical game, but there wasn't any time in that game where you're like, man, Damian Pierce is like really beating us. You know, there were times where Dexter Lawrence wasn't in the game and the Texans were able to run the ball. But Davis Mills is not a quarterback that's going to drop back to throw and beat you. He's just not that good. You saw some of the looks that, you know, Wink Martindale threw at him. He couldn't respond to it. Brandon Cooks, he just didn't look engaged. He wasn't a guy that I looked at and said, oh, he's playing, you know. You kind of see that he's not all in with them, and that's a really, you know, shitty situation for him to be in and the team to be in. So I never thought, hey, this game is in jeopardy. Even at halftime, I was like, man, they should be up by a lot more. But it wasn't like a fuck around, find out situation. Like I knew second half they're going to come out and sort of, you know, they got that big touchdown. I think the most impressive thing to me, you know, outside of, hey, like, it's just like another reminder, like this team is 7-2. Like if you go back to what you thought in, you know, June, July, August, leading up to the regular season, like they're 7-2. Like a lot of people didn't have them winning 7 games, and they haven't won 7 games since 2016. And we've done it. You know, they've only done it, I think, 2 or 3 times, you know, after the Super Bowl season where they've won at least 7 games. So that just, you know, 10 years, you know, you only win 7 games. Just speaks to how bad it's been. But, you know, that's just a great accomplishment. I think as a fan, you're very happy about, you know, year one of this new regime, and they've already done something that hasn't been done in a while. That's impressive. But when you look at this team specifically, Nick, and I want to get your thoughts on it. Yesterday, there sort of something, this has been sort of, I've talked about this occasionally on week to week, but you know, the Giants, we know the state of their roster. You know, it's a rebuilding roster. This is the year that they are, I'm not going to say they were, but they are eating a lot of the dead money, you know, sort of turning the roster over, laying the foundation. And, you know, their first draft class, you know, it's promising. You know, it's not something to write home about yet. Maybe one day it will be. But, you know, they've dealt with a lot of injuries with their draft class. And, you know, Wandale Robinson is sort of trying to find a role. I think the one thing with him is, like, we're trying to figure out eventually what his role is going to be. He's not fully there yet. You know, Thibodeau and obviously Evanil's got hurt. They've been starters, but they made impactful plays, but, you know, they've had some growing pains as rookies, which is understandable. But to me, the biggest thing is this front office continues to find just bargain bin free agents who can come in, not look like a liability, make impactful plays, and that's more that you can ask for. Fabian Moreau, we've talked about, right? You look at Jalen Smith. Jalen Smith is not what he used to be. No. You know, he's a feel-good story, but he's an easy guy to root for. But he is, you know, they're starting Mike linebacker last week. You know, that's pretty impressive. Tyree Phillips, you know, a guy who came in after the 53-man cuts that they got from Baltimore on the practice squad. Evan Neal gets hurt. He steps in, not a liability. He's actually was probably their second-best tackle outside of Andrew Thomas yesterday, or second-best offensive lineman, excuse me, outside of Andrew Thomas yesterday. Lawrence Cager scores a touchdown. Yeah. You know, like Jason Pinnock, right? Like, these are names you did not hear in August where you're like, they had a great summer. They were with other teams. Pinnock and Cager were with the Jets. I don't even know where Fabian Moreau was. Isaiah Hodgins, you know, guy that they signed last 2 weeks ago or before the bye week, steps in the second half, has some big catches. Like, that to me, it just shows that they have an eye for talent and, like, their system. The way they design it or the way they scheme these things, that they take a player's, regardless what he is, where he came from, how long he's been here, they know how to take his strengths and play to it. And as a fan, that gives you so much confidence that when this team, when this front office really starts to put their handprints on this roster, you have to be confident in the direction that they can go.
Oh, 1,000%. You think about just what some of the guys who are on this team right now looked like last year and the massive, massive impacts that some of them have made. I mean, Julian Love is the obvious one. He had another really good game this past week. You think about what Saquon is doing this year, where they have completely oriented the offense through him. I don't know if there's any other offense in the league that is as designed around the running back winning you the game as the Giants are right now. And you think about what you're getting out of Jones. He's not losing you the game. He's making efficient plays. I mean, he only threw the ball like 17, 18 times yesterday, and that's all they needed from him. They didn't need to push the ball down the field because they were able to just run it down the other team's throat. You think about, like you said, Lawrence Cager, who got cut from the Jets because they didn't think he had anything to give them at tight end. They are a healthy scratching the tight end they took from Ohio State and overplaying Lawrence or over having Lawrence Cager on their roster. In terms of just there is and it speaks to what you always talk about, the alignment between the coaching staff and the front office. And the front office is identifying guys that they think the coaching staff can do something with. And then the coaching staff is going to do it. They're not saying you have to play this type of way because this is our offense. I was talking about this with somebody yesterday. You think about the offenses they run in Kansas City and Buffalo, where Dable and Kafka come from. This looks nothing like what either of those teams do. And those guys understood our best player is Saquon. We need to run him 25 times a game. We need to find ways to maximize what Daniel Jones is good at, as opposed to focusing on as what they're not good at. This is what New England did forever. They bring in the situational pass rusher off of the street, off of another team, 8.5 sacks every single year. Only comes in on passing downs. They bring in slot receivers who Chris Hogan type guys who they can't do a lot, but in the limited role you put them in, you can squeeze something out of them. And the Giants are doing that. I mean, even Slayton, they didn't play Slayton like at all last year. And he had the biggest play of the game yesterday.
Mm-hmm. He's their wide receiver one right now. I mean, it's far and away, he's their best receiver. You know, I mean, I think, like you said, that's another remarkable thing is guys on this roster that you looked at and said, he's been nothing the last 2-3 years. Like, this is, he'll be lucky to make the roster. A good example is O'Shane Zimenez.
Yeah. Right?
Guy that, I mean, just has been nothing the first 3 years. And all of a sudden, you know, he's a good situational pass rusher. And I think another part of it is their offensive line. You talk about what they like to play to their strengths, right? It's not just Saquon Barkley. You know, he's a big part of it, but their offensive line, the strengths collectively is run blocking. That's what they're good at. So that's what they're going to do. They're going to run the football. They had some big runs with Matt Breida too. We've seen it throughout the season. Like, you bring up the New England point, and that's such a great point. Like, they, no matter the circumstances, they have shown that they can pluck a guy off a practice squad or somewhere, plug him in, and then he's not a complete liability. He makes impacts. And I think that's so impressive. And Lawrence Cager, to me, he has a very unique skill set. Yeah. A little bit like Evan Engram, where he's sort of built like a receiver, but he can create mismatches, and he's not a good blocker. So what do? They line him up in the slot, they move him outside, and he makes an impactful play, scoring a touchdown. He almost made another impactful play a couple weeks ago in Seattle, if you remember, but he was Daniel Jones overthrew him. So it's just things like that. It's like, man, like this is what competent organizations look like. Like, and it's not even like competent. It's like, this is a special skill set when you have a coaching staff and a front office that can do that, because not a lot of teams can do this. Yeah. And a lot of teams, they lose a guy or two and it's like, man, they really don't have anything else. But for a team that doesn't have as much depth as the Giants, like, they have no depth. And I think you see it when it comes to special teams, they are finding guys anywhere, bringing them in, getting the best out of them, and it's helping them win football games. Like, I know it's the Texans, I get it, but they beat the Texans with guys like Jason Pinnock, Lawrence Cager, Isaiah Hodgins, Jalen Smith, Fabian Moreau, making big plays. Like, these are not guys that, you know, you look at like, that's a Pro Bowl player, that's a really, really good player. These are bargain bin free agents. So I know it's the Texans, I get it, but man, like, this has to impress you with how they're doing it.
I mean, you think about some of the teams that are already basically cooked. I mean, the Chargers are basically done this early in the season because everybody on their team is hurt. They're down two tackles, two tight ends, a receiver. Herbert's been playing with bad ribs all year. They're down a second corner, and their season's effectively over. And that's with Justin Herbert, who's one of the best quarterbacks in terms of talent in the entire league. And that speaks to the Chargers' lack of organizational, I don't know what the word you want to use for it, adaptness, survivability, whatever. That's what the Giants are finding a way to do. But the thing is, they're not just like surviving, they're winning a lot of these games, and they're taking care, they're finding a way. For so long, it was, how are they going to lose this game? Are they going to give the ball back to the other team with too much time left, and they're going to come down the field sitting in prevent, trying not to give up the big play, let the field goal go in as soon as it hits triple zeros? Are they going to turn the ball over? Are they going to run out of time to get the ball back and find something on offense? We haven't really seen them in a situation where they've had to come from way, way behind yet. And I don't think the way they play on offense is going to lend itself to a lot of games where something like that's going to happen, unless there are a lot of turnovers. But other than that, every other game situation, they've been pretty solid. I mean, the sign of a good offense is when the defense knows what's coming and they still can't stop it. And that was the entire game yesterday.
Yeah, I agree. Let's dive in specifically offensively. You talked about Daniel Jones. I think he did only throw the ball 19 times. Had the big play to Slayton, had two touchdown passes. To me, it's like, I want them to throw the ball more because I think, you know, Daniel Jones made some big throws on third down.
Yes, he did.
He converted some big throws on third down. And even that one play to Kenny Golladay, which was dropped, not the first one, the second one that got him benched. And we'll talk about Golladay in a second. But if you look at that play, he looks the safety off, and then he makes the throw. Like, those are good plays. Like, I think those are type of things that don't show up on the stat sheet, and you don't see it at that exact time when you're watching the game. But I think Daniel, the thing about him is, and how I've grown to become a fan of his, is that outside of him getting better, he has eliminated a lot of the things that have sort of kept him back in the past, not just the turnovers. He has the ability to move in the pocket. He's making smart decisions, where in the past he might force something and it would be a turnover. It would be a terrible mistake. And I think that, to me, is the most astonishing thing, especially because when you look at what's happening in Buffalo with Josh Allen. Josh Allen's a great quarterback. You can't take anything away from him. But what has been the one knock on him this season? he's throwing some really bad interceptions. And I'm not sitting here comparing Daniel Jones to Josh Allen. I'm certainly not doing that. I'm just pointing out that this coaching staff, once again, is taking a guy's weaknesses, eliminating them so they're not a factor, and then taking its strengths and playing the game to that to those strengths. And I think that's what this coaching staff has done. Obviously, this is not the offense that they want to run for years to come. They're going to continue to build this offense. But what Daniel Jones is showing is that, hey, I can be a starting quarterback in the system, or I have at least earned the right to show you that I can be. Whereas I know you're not doing it this year. It's not fully open. There's still some shackles on, and they might want to, they're going to eventually have to take some of these shackles off and let him throw the ball. But he is just, to me, ascending week to week and continuing to do things where it's like, yeah, that's what a good quarterback does.
I mean, he only ran the ball, I think, four or five times, only 20-something yards. I mean, he didn't have to do it with his legs yesterday. The shots were there. They hit the couple of big plays. They get lucky that Petrie missed the tackle on Slayton. But in terms of just Jones, big picture-wise, this is what you do with a quarterback who has tools. You give him the ability to use those tools. What did we complain about the entirety of the time Jason Garrett was here? No pre-snap motion, limited play action, limited RPOs, stick routes, curl routes, no chances for Jones to do anything well. And getting into those obvious third and long situations where he's going to struggle against pressure. They are such a threat to run the ball in any situation that the defense has to respect the run, and it's going to make him a more effective passer because he doesn't have to do as much. That's the thing that's really kind of sinking in and why he's been so effective. He hasn't had to play out of his mind to be successful this year as he would have in years past. I mean, he's played probably the best stretch of football in his entire career this season. I mean, that's not a particularly high bar to clear, but the signs of continual improvement speak to what you were just saying about he's earned a shot here. The long-term outlook for what he's going to be with this team, they're going to have to figure that out. It's a difficult conversation. I'm sure it's one we're going to have on this show through the offseason until they figure out what exactly they want to do, but he's absolutely played his way into another year, which I didn't think he would be capable of doing coming into this year, to be honest with you. I just assumed they were going to be a 4 or 5 win team. They would be drafting a quarterback or trading up to draft a quarterback and starting from over next year. But they've made a lot of progress this year already.
I want to ask you about Kenny Golladay. The first one, I found the dialogue around that. Kenny Golladay dropped that pass. Could have been a better throw. Yeah, obviously could have been a better throw. But it was a good enough throw that an NFL wide receiver should make the catch. It went right through his hands. But say whatever you want. The second one that got him benched. I mean, so much of when we talk about Golladay has been can't get separation. You know, it's just not working. There's no chemistry between him and Daniel Jones. Where does he want the ball thrown? Like, it's to me, yesterday was just, I hadn't put the nail in the coffin yet, but I just think it's over.
It has to be. I mean, they were in that game. You saw Dable lose his temper a couple of times on the sideline during the course of that game. And you can't have that. I mean, you got guys out there who have half the talent of Kenny Golladay putting in a lot more effort, even if it's stuff like run blocking. You have seen a lot of these guys who are career practice squad wide receivers in the running game, making an impact that way. Kenny, you don't want to run your route? Fine. You better be run blocking really hard. Oh, you're not on the field on running downs? Well, you have no use for this. You have no use on this team. You're not going to make those plays. And those are concentration, confidence. Those are a number of things. It could be any number of reasons why he didn't catch those balls, but he's had more than enough of an opportunity. They want him to be successful. They are begging for him to take one of these chances they've given him and to make a play. They would like nothing more than to have wide receiver one resolved, but they don't, because he either A, physically cannot do it anymore. Mentally, he either has no confidence in himself or he's just checked out. That's really what it comes down to. It's one of those three things. It cannot be anything else.
Yeah, I think, you know, he has two catches for 22 yards this season.
Yeah.
Isaiah Hodgins had two catches for 41 yards. And one of those catches went for 26 yards. To me, they brought in Isaiah Hodgins as sort of like, and maybe just
a facsimile. Yeah. Galladay facsimile. Yeah.
It's just like, hey, it's an insurance policy. Like,
yeah.
If Galladay doesn't get it together and can't catch simple passes, Isaiah Hodgins can. And he's available. So let's bring him in. So to me, it has to, I don't know, like, in terms of like, is he going to be in? Like, the problem is they can't cut him, because when you cut him,
yeah,
it opens up a roster spot, which means you're eating more of your salary cap because you have to get another guy in there.
Yeah.
I don't know how the NFL CBA is in terms of, like, you know, the NBA, they just send a guy home and tell him just go home and, you know, well, you're done.
We'll pay you. It's fine, but don't be around the team.
Yeah. I don't know if they're like, they do buyouts. I don't know if that works in the NFL. I don't know if that's happened before. It's definitely not common. But you just, I mean, you do keep, you just basically have to keep him inactive because he doesn't contribute on special teams. He didn't get on the field in the second half after he dropped that pass. You can no longer trust him to be on the field because he might drop up like that. It was against the Tech. Like that could have, that, it was a crucial drop in that moment because it killed the drive and the Giants were forced to punt. And so if in another situation late in the game, you know, you're trying to need a big play and he drops a pass, like, he can cost you a game. So I just, you have to just bench him.
Don't dress him. Yeah, don't dress him.
Do something. If release him, I don't know, but it just seems like that's the nail in the coffin. Like the chances are over. There's not, I don't think there's going to be another one. They're always going to find a, like, if there's injuries, they'll just bring somebody. I don't envision Kenny Galladay being on the field anymore.
I can't see a world in which he does, because like you said, if he was a special teams guy, maybe you get on the field there, but he's not doing that. Send him home. If he has to be, tell him he's wearing street clothes to every game. You have him on the sideline in a jumpsuit. Don't have a guy like that who's not engaged in practice. That's bad for the other guys around him. That's the thing here. You're building a positive culture. You want the guys who are here. You want guys who want to be here. The fact that he is not stepping up to meet this moment when the team desperately needs somebody to meet that, fill that role, that just goes to show you he's, even if he could physically do it, he's not giving it to you. That's really the frustrating part, is you haven't seen him be particularly good, I would say, in 3 seasons, okay in 2 seasons. And that time he's been here, it's been a joke. I mean, like the running joke on Twitter about Andrew Thomas having more of receiving touchdowns than him. That's the legacy. You got out receiving touchdowns by a left tackle.
Yeah, I think to me, they're not even asking him to be a wide receiver one because they know he can't be that. To me, it's like, hey, when you're on the field and you're open and the ball's thrown to you, just make a
catch it.
Like, and he can't even do that.
Nope.
So it's like, other parts of the offense, the offensive line. Do you remember a time the Giants had this much depth on their offensive line? Like, you got their starting five, right? You know, Thomas, yeah. And then when he's healthy, Bredesen and Feliciano and Glowinski, and then Evan Neal. But then you look at their bench, it's like Nick Gates, Shane Lemieux, Tyree Phillips as your swing tackle. I'm missing somebody else too.
Oh, the other guard. The rookie with way too many vowels in his name. Owuzu, something like that.
Oh, yeah, Josh Zudu. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah, the third round pick, Josh Zudu.
Yeah.
Like, that's 9 offensive linemen right there who can play at any given time. Like, that is some serious, serious depth they have. And there were times where they went, like, there were, like, 8 offensive linemen in the game. And then they were running the football. And it was effective. And I think the building of the offensive line depth has been really, really impressive. And it's big reason why they can turn around and give Saquon the ball 35 times and win football games, because their offensive line can run block. Azudu, who's struggling pass protection, has been really, when they pull him, he's able to, you know, he's got some speed to get to the outside and block somebody, and they're able to hit that corner and get a big gain. I think that's really, really been impressive. What are your thoughts on the line?
Oh, this has been the biggest complaint we've had forever, that they've
Oh, yeah.
invested nothing in the offensive line, and the guys they did invest in, like Nate Solder, were nothing. They actually have depth. They are coaching these guys to the point where even the backups are competent. The years of the Giants just running out a swing tackle who was the third tackle just because he was a warm body. I mean, you think about some of the games they've gone into with guys like Cam Fleming and Marshall Newhouse, and just so many mediocre bargain been last tackle available that they brought in because they knew they needed somebody, but they're the reason the running game is working, like you were saying. It's
And I
very
forgot
hard
about
to.
I forgot about Matt Pert too,
Oh,
who was
yes,
some,
he.
was you know who was in contention of being that swing tackle, but
Yeah.
he might not even be able to get dressed once Evan Neal gets back.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. You need at least that extra tackle. Good teams will have that extra tackle, and then one guy who can play either guard or center in a pinch. That's the sign of a solid offensive line. Right now, it's still cheap, which is nice. The Andrew Thomas extension is going to be expensive, but he's more than earned it. That's the thing. You need your offensive line to be interchangeable. You need it to be dependable. And they've been that this year. I mean, it hasn't been perfect. I mean, that Dallas game is still kind of lingering in the back of my mind from what happened the first time. And that's coming up big in a couple of weeks here. But other than that, I can't really say the offensive line has been noticeably bad in any game other than the Dallas game.
The big thing, and they're able to run the style of offense they're able to run because their offensive line has not been a liability outside of that Dallas game. Now, I know Seattle really shut down Barkley, but excuse me, they were in that game in the fourth quarter, so it's like. They're still it's not been as bad as like they have to completely tear up their game plan. So that's been impressive. Defensively, Dexter Lawrence has put himself in that tier one defensive line group with the Chris Jones, Jeffrey Simmons, Aaron Donald sort of above all. Dexter Lawrence is what he's been able to turn himself into, it's unreal. He's one of those defensive players, and this to me, this is like it's I mean this with all due respect to other great defensive linemen, but he has put himself in that conversation of defensive players that can make people around them better. People talk
Yes.
about quarterbacks, like a quarterback makes people around him better. When you have a defensive player who can, and they typically they're on the defensive line or they're in the secondary and they can make the people around them better, but specifically on the defensive line, when you have a guy that can dominate the way he dominates, get double teamed, it opens things up for other people. He is a dominant player. He is a bar none cornerstone player. He had an amazing game. I thought the part of the reason why I thought the Texans had no shot was because they couldn't block Dexter Lawrence, among other things. But I was like, they simply cannot block Dexter Lawrence, and he's a game-changing player. When you think of, great defensive players in the NFL, Dexter Lawrence is one of those guys that comes to my mind. He has solidified himself with the way he's played this season. He truly is a three-down player now, and it's crazy because the man of that size, he's a freak athlete. We've seen his speed. He's now filling up the stat sheet in ways that you don't see defensive tackles fill up stat sheets. And I think Charles Davis said it best, right? I'm not big on this, but wherever the Pro Bowl is, Dexter Lawrence has to be there. He is a special, special player.
I mean, of the normal, like the humans, like you were saying, Aaron Donald's his own tier up there. Of the human beings who are playing in the NFL, Dexter Lawrence is right there. He's going to have a strong argument to be probably second team all pro behind Aaron Donald on the first team. He's been an absolute game wrecking force from the interior. That's going to make the job easier for the guys off the edge once they kind of get into a little bit of a better rhythm, especially for someone like Thibodeaux. Leonard Williams had another really good game yesterday. He had, I think, nine tackles and a sack. Really good game. And when you have a dominating force like that at one position, that's going to make everybody around them better, like you were saying, because the responsibility is less. If they're hurrying up the quarterback, the defensive backs only have to play coverage for 2 seconds as opposed to 2.5 seconds. Make the quarterback's process speed up the ball gets out faster than they want it to, the play doesn't develop, no one's open, that makes your corners and safeties' lives a lot easier. That can protect your linebackers, especially, who aren't that great in coverage like the Giants linebackers aren't, against a good tight end or against a good slot receiver. So it's really important that they've kind of ironed out this pass rush problem, because again, this has been a real issue for years that they haven't been able to get enough heat. The best Giants defense played in recent years was the year they just sat in zone and said, okay, throw over the top of us or punt. That's all they did in the pandemic year, was keep everything in front of them, limit the dangerous plays, and they were able to get by with that. Now the defense is dictating these games. They are forcing other teams off the field to punt. They are forcing turnovers, and they are giving the offense shorter fields. That's another thing that really helps when you have a limited offense. If they only have to go 40 yards as opposed to 80 yards, it's a lot easier to get points. Even if it's only a field goal, those points add up.
Yeah, and I think, like, what I'm, you know, when we talk about Dexter Lawrence, we can talk about the rest of the defense too, but it's like, when you have that game-changing defensive player who makes game-changing plays, like, this is not, it's not just like we're talking about a guy who once was making game-changing plays and is living off his name. No, Dexter Lawrence is putting himself in that conversation that when people say, when people bring him up, they'll say, you know, he's one of the best defensive players in the NFL. That's who Dexter Lawrence is. And you talk about previous years, the Giants never had those type of players. I mean, Dexter Lawrence was always a good player, but he is now a great player in this league, and he is a special player. He plays 90% of the snaps. For a guy that size to play 90% of the snaps, it's crazy. He's indispensable. If you watch that Texan game, when he comes off the field, the Texans were able to run the football. Justin Ellis, who's the backup nose tackle, and the Giants also have some issues, you know, their interior line depth because of the injuries. But when Dexter Lawrence was not on the field, the Texans were able to run the ball. When he got back on the field, everything stopped. And he is just, he's been obviously far and away the best defensive player on this team. He's up, you know, him and Andrew Thomas, in my opinion, with Saquon Barkley, have been the three, you know, real MVPs. They have, so like, it is a special thing to watch with Dexter Lawrence. And for somebody who was highly critical of him, because I felt like there was too much conversation about a guy that I looked at as a two-down player and didn't really, you know, rush the passer as much as I thought he should be doing, based on the conversation that people were having. Dexter Lawrence is a special, special player. He is a game-changing player. Not a lot of those in the NFL right now. And the Giants got one of them on their defense, and that goes a long way.
Oh, it makes everything else easier. The reason they're able to dial up all of these crazy blitzes and come giving exotic looks is they know Dexter's getting there. It makes it a lot easier to blitz recklessly as they do when they know they're actually going to get home, when they are going to make the pocket change because the center is getting pushed back into the quarterback, or when the guard is getting thrown into the center. They are a truly wrecking force. This is the best a Giants pass rush has been since Olivier Vernon and JPP.
When they spent all that money,
That was the last time a Giants defense was this good. This defense is – the defense is winning them these games. The defense is why they are able to get by with a run-first offense in today's NFL.
That's the point I was going to get to. Is like, I don't think the defense is necessarily winning them the games. I think they're just – it kind of goes like peanut butter and jelly, right?
Yeah.
To have that offensive game plan, you need your defense to get, you know, stops and limit, you know, the points. It's working, and I think that's why 7-2.
Oh God, man, we're really 7-2. This is delightful.
It's crazy, right? The secondary, obviously, McKinney out. Don't know when he's going to come back. Dane Belton, we talked about it earlier with some of those, you know, guys they picked up off the street. You know, fourth round rookie, didn't look like a liability. You know, did it? I mean, there were times where the intriguing part was there was that one play where I think it was Chris Moore or Nico Collins who caught the touchdown pass. It was called back, or maybe it was Brandon Cooks, but Texans throw a touchdown pass, gets called back. I think Dane Belton was late to get there.
Yeah.
Very next play, they go back to it, and Dane Belton gets the pick.
Yeah.
So it's like learning on the fly. Right, like you're learning from your mistakes, And that's impressive. Like, he is, I think Wick Martindale called him a student of the game. I've actually had the luxury of having conversations with Dane Belton's dad and just talking to him and getting to know what kind of player he is. Just seems like a guy that's going to be, you know, I don't know how good he's going to be, but he's going to be a guy that the Giants will at least have for 4 years at cost control, that can step in when injuries happen and maybe find himself a role.
That's the beautiful thing about when your team is playing well. The guys who only have to play in situational times make one good play. Everybody knows your name now. You get an interception in the NFL, you get that ball, the equipment guy writes it on it in Sharpie, that you have that the rest of your life. That's a special moment. And that speaks to the environment this group has. They made that mistake on that play. It got called back. They went back to the huddle. I was reading about it in The Athletic this morning, that play specifically. They went back to the huddle and realized, oh, I was late. Okay. They ran the same exact play. They jumped it. They were there. That's the sign of a group that knows what they're doing. That's the biggest thing, and why you got to feel confident that even though this roster isn't that talented, that it won't just be a one-year thing. That young guys, when they come in, they are put in a position to succeed, even if it's only in a limited role. And that is an infectious feeling for guys. It's, oh, he made a play. All right, I need to go out and make a play now because I want to get playing time on a good team.
Yeah. Just their defense. I mean, it's awesome that they're able to do what they're doing given the injuries. So that's the Texans game. 7-2 was a win that Giants control that game all the way. Yeah. Other stuff that came out of the week, the big thing was two things. We'll start with Saquon Barkley. Contract talks. I don't know how far they got or how much contract negotiations went on. I don't know. But they talked, which means that they want to bring Saquon Barkley back. I want to get your thoughts on that whole situation. What is your mindset about it? How do you feel? Is bringing Barkley back the utmost important thing for this Giants team? What are your thoughts?
It's so complicated because I am very much anti-running backs. Every time somebody in the group chat starts talking about running backs, I just pull up the graphic with Todd Gurley and Steven Jackson and Devontae Freeman and all of the running backs who got multi-year extensions of more than $10 million. And all of those guys were on different teams by the third year of those contracts. There is just, it is such a risk at that position that it is a challenge. But when you look at it in terms of what Saquon's done for the Giants this year, I mean, if they replace him with an average to slightly above average running back, probably losing at least one or two more games. He's been that impactful. He's been the driving engine of their offense. They knew they needed to run the ball into the ground yesterday. They kept handing it off to him. I know a lot of people are very the biggest thing about Saquon in this extension is it has to make sense for both sides. It cannot just be him getting the number he wants, which from reports he wants to get what McCaffrey's getting, which is I think 16 something. The franchise tag is 12. I don't think they would go to 16. I don't think they would go to 15. I think if they can find a number like 14, I think maybe that would work for the Giants. I don't know if Saquon would be willing to play for 14, but the biggest thing is just doing what makes sense for the rest of the team. You can't be too worried about just him because this upcoming offseason is going to be probably the most important one they have for the next couple of years because they're going to have a ton of cap space to figure out what they want to do with the rest of this roster. And it comes down to the quarterback and Jones and Barkley. Those are your two marquee offensive guys right now. You're going to have to pay Andrew Thomas in 2 years from now, I think. But until you figure out what you want to do with your team, I don't know if you can make a clear cut. They should keep him. They should let him go. They should franchise him. Because I think they need to figure out what they want to be going forward. Because I don't, like you were saying earlier, I don't think they want to be a power running team that relies on whoever the running back is and run blocking to win a lot of games. It's hard to win. It's hard to score 30 points in the NFL if you are a run first team. And 30 points is your floor of being like, if you need to win against a really good team, you need to be able to drop 30. The Vikings and the Bills, 30 consistently. The Chiefs, consistently, 31.4, highest in the league. You got to be able to score that many points if you want to win a Super Bowl at some point. we haven't seen a run first team really contend for a Super Bowl in a couple years now. I mean, you think about last year, you had the Rams and the Bengals. The Bengals do run the ball a lot, not really a run first team, though. That offense goes as Ja'Marr Chase does. The year before that, Tampa and Kansas City, those are pass first offense. The year before that, two pass first offenses. It's just really hard to be a run first team and win. Look at what happens to the Titans every year in the playoffs. They need to find a way to throw the ball effectively. And until they do that, their ceiling is going to be limited. I'm very much enjoying this season. He's been a pleasure to watch. I'm very happy he's playing well. It sucked seeing him not play well last year. It was very annoying to see him during the summer complaining about people complaining about him not playing well because he didn't play well last year. He should have owned up and said, I should be better. And he's been better.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's a very complicated, you know, conversation. And it's a very hostile conversation.
Yes.
Because you have people, it's like there's two crowds. There's the, I don't care, we're not paying a running back. Doesn't matter what you say, doesn't matter what he does. And then it's the other side where it's like, give him whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And that's the loudest.
Yes.
Where I think a lot of people are sort of in the middle where they're like, look, they don't have another skill position player right now on their roster that comes remotely close to Saquon Barkley. Like they don't. They simply do not. And regardless who the quarterback is next year, doesn't matter. They're going to need a skill player that they can rely on, whether it's a running back or a receiver or a tight end, whatever. They're going to need somebody. And look, I was, based on what I thought the season would be, I thought the trade deadline was going to be a time where they entertain offers and move Barkley because I didn't think they were going to be a good team. Obviously, that's out the window. The trade deadline is gone. Based on what I've seen from Saquon and I felt like he was going to have a career year. I said it on this podcast. I said Saquon is going to be the number one guy in this offense. He's going to have the best season of his career, even better than his rookie year when he won Rookie of the Year honors. I just feel like you have to have a price tag of like, yeah, this is the most I'm willing to pay. Christian McCaffrey is $16 million. I think his deal was 4 years, $64 million or $62 million or something like that. The franchise tag is $12 million. Is there a middle ground there? Can we go $13 million, $14 million? Can we talk about guaranteed dollars? The only thing to me is I don't want a five-year deal.
Yeah.
Short three-year extension, all for it, right? Even 4 years, I'm all for it. Once you start talking about five, and like it just starts to add up, guaranteed money grows and grows. Chubb got 3 years, $36.6 million. Obviously, he's one of the more elite running backs in this league. I think Barkley's better than him, even though Chubb is putting up numbers and he's up there. McCaffrey said $16 million. Alvin Kamara is at $14 million. He's obviously shooting for Christian McCaffrey and probably going to be that, get a million above him, so like $17 million or $18 million. To me, I look at 4 years, or excuse me, 3 years, $15 million a year.
Yeah.
You know, 4 years, $15 million a year, something like that. Because even though I'm with you with like, you know, you never get a return on investment when you pay a running back, they're just stuck because they don't have anybody. And yes, getting rid of Barkley doesn't just create a hole at running back. It creates a much larger hole with your offense because, yes, you don't have that game-changing player on your offense and you have to go find it. And so you bring Barkley back. He's an important part of the locker room. Obviously it's clear to me. It's just a matter of how they do it. And it could get ugly. I mean, they probably they're going to franchise tag it. That's going, yeah, to happen. What happens after that? I don't know, you know, but it just seems like we're headed toward the franchise tag. And then after that, we'll see.
One of my friends brought it up the other day, and I thought it was a good point, and I'm going to echo it here. You got to think about the message that sends to the rest of the team too. If a guy has a career year and then you just get rid of him after that, there are some things that do matter above the individual return on investment. You do want to send the right message that when you play well for this team, you will be taken care of because you are a part of this team and that matters. And I do think that does matter to some point. Same thing with Daniel Jones. What kind of message does it send to everybody in the organization and the fan base if they go 10-7, 11-6, and they get rid of the quarterback and they get somebody else in here? Same thing with Saquon. If they go 11-6 and then franchise tag him and it gets kind of acrimonious in the offseason where he requests a trade, he wants to go somewhere that'll give him that 4 or 5 year extension, what kind of message does that send to everybody? And that's one of the things that makes being a GM difficult, because it isn't just the managing the cap. It is managing the personalities, and you got to manage 53 of them, and you got to manage the coaching staff. And it's a lot of things to balance. And it's why this is so difficult. Running backs are probably the hardest position in sports to accurately price, because every guy wants to be the next highest paid guy, just like the quarterbacks, just like the receivers. Right. But we know historically running backs do not age well.
Yeah, you're spot on. The part about, like, when you're trying to lay the foundation and then you get rid of sort of the face of your franchise, it just makes it – it leaves a huge void. Yes. And it's easier for fans to say, well, look at Alvin – or excuse me, look at Todd Gurley, look at Devontae Freeman, look at all these running backs that got paid. Yeah, you're right, you know, but it's much larger than the return on investment. You're trying to build something here. And like you said, it does send a bad message. The second thing was, you know, Adam Schefter drops these news things at like 4 or 5 in the morning on Sundays. And I have my notification on for him. So I get, like, you know, he just news dumps at like 6 o'clock in the morning, you know. And one of the things was Odell Beckham.
Yeah.
And I think there's 5 teams named. I think it was the Dallas Cowboys, New York Giants, Kansas City Chiefs, Buffalo Bills. I think there might have been one more team in there too, but the Giants are one of those teams. And it's shocking, really, when you think about it, right? Like how he left, and now, and he's openly said, hey, the reunion with the Giants is something I definitely am interested in doing, right? The Giants have been open with it. We saw Joe Shane say, hey, I have been talking with Odell's reps. But here's where it gets complicated. The Giants can't do a one-year deal, and Odell doesn't want a one-year deal. He's sort of looking for somewhere where he can stay. Now, that benefits the Giants, but it also creates another dilemma for them. And that dilemma is Odell Beckham tore his ACL twice and without going a full 16 games. So he did it twice in one football season, right? He's also 30 years old, or going to be 30 years old. There's a lot of emotions in it.
Yeah.
And the Dallas factor is also there too, because fans just don't want him to go to Dallas. And I wouldn't want him to go to Dallas either. How much do you – like, what are you willing to spend? Because obviously they need a receiver. No, there's no doubt about that. And Odell's probably not a wide receiver. Like, he's not the same guy he was when he came in 2014 in those seasons. He's obviously a different player. But, like – what is your mindset toward that? Like obviously everyone is for it, but realistically speaking, how much would you be like, I'm like, if you're Joe Shane, I'd be like, I'm willing to go that far for him.
I mean, realistically, wide receiver one money is like 21, 22 million per year, 23 million per year. I think Devontae's getting like 25. So low 20s is wide receiver one.
I think Devontae's up at like 27, 28. And I think Tyreek is at 30 million.
Yeah, the high end is like that now. I mean, in my head, the rule of thumb for free agent wide receivers was always you wanted to start around 16 million and then go down from there, depending on who you were getting. Because typically, elite players don't get to free agency. That's part of the way the NFL works, is it's really hard to get a Tyreek, a Devonta. You have to kind of force a trade somewhere to get the extension you want. Odell, realistically, I mean, because it would be prorated if it was a one-year deal. You'd only be signing him for like weeks 12 through 17. So I don't know what the cap math would work out to for those weeks. And I don't know if the Giants could fit him. They would probably have to make another roster move somewhere to be able to fit him, to give him anything close to what he would want. Cause he's going to want real money. He's going to want, like, you know, $8-9 million prorated for those 5 weeks of the regular season. And then you get the win bonuses in the playoffs. I just don't say, I also think the Giants are kind of being used for leverage here. Because I think Odell wants another Super Bowl, realistically. Like, I could see a reunion with the Giants after this year, maybe, if he can finish the play a playoff run healthy and get close to another championship or win another championship. I don't think he's coming here. He's going to Buffalo. He's going to a team where he can get another ring. That's what it's about at this point. When you're 30, I know he got his first one this year, but he didn't really get to contribute throughout that game. And that is one of the most upsetting things I've ever experienced, was being like, damn, Odell got this far, this close. He was making a real impact in that game.
I had money on him winning MVP.
Yeah.
I put money on him winning MVP.
I had him to score a touchdown, and I had him to score a first touchdown. And he was great in that Rams offense until he got hurt. They really found a good role for him. And that would be the thing. I trust this coaching staff that if you gave them Odell Beckham, they would figure out a way to use him, even if he's the only receiver on the field with Nick Gates playing fullback. They'd figure it out. This is that kind of coaching staff. You also don't know what he is right now. He hasn't seen game action since February, and you do run the risk of signing a guy who's torn an ACL twice coming in and just having no burst. There's a real chance that's the case. That's really my only concern. If they find a way, by all means, I would love Odell back. I am an original Odell Brigade defense guy. Original. Odell gave us some of the best Giants memories of my young life. Like, there were years where he was the only player on this team worth watching. The years where he would take a slant to the house, that was all he would do. That was the offense. They beat Dallas that game 10-7, where that was the only play they had on offense that was successful the entire game. I love Odell. I would love to have him back. I just don't think the Giants are seriously being considered as a landing spot. And I don't think the Giants have the money to make it work.
I was with you for a while. But once, like, I was on that train too, the leverage and all that. But to me, because he wants a long-term deal, and because he's been open about a reunion, and the Giants have sort of been open about a reunion, I don't look at it as just a leverage thing. I mean, obviously, when you're a free agent, you use everybody as leverage, even the team that you want to go to. Like, if you want to go to a team, you want to go there, but you also want to see if you can use another team to get more money out of them. So there's always leverage there. I just think it's a matter of, like, from a football perspective, is like, so Chris Godwin, who's the highest paid wide receiver two, makes $20 million a year. And it was interesting that he was mentioned in that article, because I think Odell realizes that his role the rest of his career is a wide receiver two, is a very good wide receiver two. That's what he was with the Rams. Cooper was obviously the Cooper Kupp show, but Odell was a great complimentary wide receiver two there. And in that Super Bowl, he was on his way, I believe, to a winning the Super Bowl MVP. I mean, the Bengals could not have covered Cooper Kupp and Odell Beckham. You saw that, because even when Odell went out, Cooper Kupp still had his way with the Bengals secondary. So, to me, I just look at the situation and say, okay, how much am I – put the emotions aside for a second, right? You got to put it aside. How much – and let's you know, the leverage, let's say the interest is real, right, on both sides. How deep would you be willing to go in your pockets for a guy who tore his ACL twice in, I think, a 16-month span?
Yeah.
And the answer is not that deep. You know, like, I'm not trying to go that deep, regardless if I'm a contender or not a contender. Like, the Cowboys got rid of Amari Cooper because they couldn't afford to pay his $22 million a year salary. Amari Cooper's a really good receiver. He's a wide receiver one.
Yep.
You know, CD has established himself now, but it's like, you know, they had to get rid of Amari Cooper. So it's like, how deep are they willing to go? Buffalo has Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis. You know, Kansas City, who I think is a legitimate player in this, because if you look at their receiving core, outside of Kadarius Toney, a lot of those guys are on one-year deals. Juju Smith-Schuster's on a one-year deal. You know, Valdez Scantling's on a one-year deal. So, like, adding Odell there, that I can see that, right? And they have Travis Kelce, so he's not like a I know Kelsey's a tight end, but Kelsey's their, you know, their go-to guy, right? He's their Cooper Kupp. So, and then you got the Giants who are looking for receivers, and the and look, ultimately, I can't stomach going deep. I have no, I'm rooting for it to happen.
Yeah.
I do think, and I'm not saying this just wishful thinking, I do think there is a legitimate shot Odell could be back with the Giants. I just don't know how deep they're willing to go.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the thing. And the big thing for me was when Odell said he's a multi-year deal, he talks about how much he enjoyed living in New York. I think that matters here. Where you talk about how he's just trying to win a ring, I think more so, yes, he wants to go to a contending team, but he also, it's very important for him not to go jumping around. I'm in Buffalo this year, then I'm going to a different team. Like, I think he's looking to settle down. I also know he's a much different person. He's not as much of a wild card as he was previously. He is now a father. He's now settled down in his life. And he likes New York. So, yeah. And the Giants need a wide receiver. So now it's just a matter of can they get the money to fit. But I do think there is a legitimate shot. And the fact that the Giants are mentioned, I think that makes, you know, to me, there is a legitimate shot. Odell is could be a Giant by the end of the month.
It'd be nice. It'd be very nice.
It would be. It would electrify MetLife Stadium. But it's just a matter of will it happen?
Yeah. I still can't believe the Colts won that game yesterday, bro. I still can't believe the Colts won that. We got to get our weekly slandering the Colts in, but good Lord, they really went back to
Can I say something, man? Derek Carr.
Oh, man. God.
I get it, man. Like, you're an emotional guy, and this is an emotional game. Like, I know these guys put in a lot of work throughout the week and throughout their lives to – but, like – Derek Carr and Dan Campbell are very similar, in my opinion, where it's a lot of what they do, it's very climactic.
Yes.
You know? Like, Dan Campbell loses so many times. Like, he's lost so many games. And after every game, or 70% of the time, it's like a climactic scene at his press conference. Same thing with Derek Carr. Now, I will say, with respect to Derek Carr, Derek Carr has been through a lot of shit over the last year with the Raiders, okay? Like, there's been a lot of fucking things going on with Oakland. And then Josh McDaniels gets dropped on his doorstep. Like, hey, this is your new coach, right? Which is, that's a whole, like, another fucked up situation to be in because of McDaniels' past. I just think Derek Carr needs to go to another team. I think it's over with the Vegas Raiders.
That's one of the conspiracy theories I saw on NFL Reddit the other day, is that McDaniels is calling a horrendous offense so they can get rid of Carr after this year and draft a quarterback. That's one of I love how NFL Reddit works, where you just get full-throated conspiracy theories like that. There, I mean, there were weeks where they threw to Devontae Adams like one time. I mean, yeah. If you're, unless you're consciously trying to not throw to him, he's open. I can promise you, he's open. Throw him the ball. But God, they suck. The Raiders absolutely suck. That was an entertaining game to watch because of like the human element of like, that's Jeff Saturday. Why isn't he on NFL Countdown right now? But yeah. Also the Colts didn't look awful yesterday. Maybe getting rid of Frank Reich was the move. I don't know. Football's weird. Well,
I think not playing Matt Ryan also played a big role in that too.
Yeah.
Like, Matt Ryan might be done, but he's better than Sam Ehlinger.
Yeah.
I'm happy for Jeff Saturday. I mean, everything that you read and when you see him, like, I don't know Jeff Saturday, but, like, he seems like a good guy. Like, I'm happy for him. I think a lot of people – the problem is because he worked – like, that whole conversation about the Rooney Rule and all that, it's such a touchy conversation for so many people. And the fact that he worked at ESPN, and it seems like everybody at ESPN really loved him. Like I said last week, like, I don't mind this. Like, I don't mind the bold, like, let's do it. Like, just hire that guy or going out and, you know, like, I don't mind that stuff. I like it when teams get bold. Obviously, there's another conversation to be had there. There's another element to it. But on Sunday, when they kicked the ball off, all that conversation went away, and it's like, yeah, I'm rooting for fucking Jeff Saturday. Why not? What, am I going to root for the Raiders? Like, I don't have to fuck. Like, I'm not going to root for Jeff. Like, here's the thing about – this is one thing I realized that with so many people is you have an issue with the hiring of Jeff Saturday or any – in terms of, like, the whole Rooney Rule thing, you have an issue with it. But, like, you cannot put that aside and just be like, okay, it happened. It's a problem. We got to continue talking about it. But I can be happy for that person who just won their first game. You know, like, that's the big disconnect we have, where it's like, we can have that conversation. We can also be happy for the person when he accomplishes something. But the problem is, the one thing that I noticed was, outside of the ESPN stuff, like, it was a conversation on across networks. The people that were heavy, heavy, heavy critical of Jeff Saturday's hiring weren't able to say, that's awesome, Jeff Saturday won a game. Like, he's never been a coach on a collegiate or professional level, and he walked on that field and he won his first fucking game. Like, that's an awesome story. Yeah. Like, I know we got issues, but that's fucking awesome. That was me. I was like, dude, this is awesome for Jeff Saturday.
Yeah, I can walk and chew gum at the same time. Exactly. It's one of those things where you can understand why it's a problem, but there's nuance to conversation. Social media doesn't lend itself to nuance. That's the problem. No.
And you can't have these conversations on social media. You just simply cannot. No. Dallas losing. Mike
that was McCarthy. Fun.
It was
that
fun.
Was fun.
Did you see Mike McCarthy dress up as Vince?
Yeah, that was funny.
I was like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? Like, I mean, look, I get it. Like, you won part of Super Bowl. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of love still there. Maybe one day you'll be in the Ring of Honor. But why the fuck are you dressed like Vince Lombardi?
Like, he thought he was going to win. He thought they were going to dance on Green Bay's grave.
When I saw him dressed as Vince Lombardi, I told my friend, you need to put money on the Packers.
Yeah.
I'm not a big gambler, so I give advice. I was like, the Packers are going to win this game. Like, are you kidding me, Mike McCarthy? You're dressing up as Vince Lombardi? What? What the fuck?
The Giants are in second place.
They are.
That's the Giants are in second place.
The best part is seeing Cowboy fans say, well, we beat you guys. Well, it's like, yeah, I know. Nobody's denying that. But we're in second place. Like, what's your point? I don't write the standings, you know, like, you know, like, this isn't power rankings. Like, it's just, we're 7-2, you're 6-3. Yeah. Them losing was great, but I felt like it was happening. And then Christian Watson, who was my pre-draft crush, loved his game paying off. I picked him up in fantasy, but my fantasy team is so good. And I know we're not going to make this a fantasy conversation, but I had to cut him because
that sucks.
Of receivers. And I cut him like weeks ago, but I was happy for him. 3 touchdowns. That was good. The Packers are not dead. They are not dead.
They're not.
I always thought they were going to start slow and they were going to rely heavily on their defense and running game, but for some reason they didn't want to rely on their running game for the first half of the season because it was going to take time with these receivers to get going and Rodgers and rhythm and all that. But that looked like a breakout game to me for their passing offense.
Yeah, definitely. The NFC North, that's not a bad division. I mean, the Bears are feisty. We're going to see Detroit next week, and Green Bay's still got Rodgers. He hasn't been great this year, but he's still Aaron Rodgers.
Justin Fields is awesome, too.
Yeah.
He's very enjoyable to watch. I'm not going to extreme lengths about it, but, like, what he's doing is awesome. Like, Chicago has been – they've been looking for something like that. He's electrifying that franchise and that city.
Yeah, he had one of the most impressive performances of a quarterback. That guy, that's the Cam Newton Auburn offense where he's reading half of the field, and if it's not there, he's running. That's the Cam Newton Auburn offense. You know what your guy is good at. Okay, like I forget who their offensive coordinator is, but I was reading about
Luke
it the Getzy. Other day. Yeah, I was reading about it the other day. He was like, yeah, I spent my bye week watching college tape to come up with something so we could run the ball better with Justin. Well, yeah, I mean, you had a whole offseason. You knew he was good at running the ball, but better late than never.
Yeah. It's crazy what happens when you play to your player strengths, right? Like, it's just
a
bizarre thing. Like, it's why don't more teams do this, right? Like, the Rams. I think the Rams are dead. I think it's over. Yeah. I think it's over. The Lions got their first-round pick. So Detroit, our next opponent, could have two top 10 picks potentially. That's awesome. Every time I see New Orleans lose, it just, like, I feel like bashing my head through a wall. The fact that they made that trade, and then the fact that they just don't want to play Jameis Winston, I don't get it. Andy Dalton is not your long-term answer. There was all this hype around Jameis Winston probably or potentially being a long-term solution. Like, I think the season Geno Smith is having, a lot of people thought Jameis Winston would have that season and the Saints would have that record, right? Like,
yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah.
And he's like, dude, play Jameis Winston. Dennis Allen, now I know why you didn't get a head coaching job despite having a good defense in New Orleans for so long and being a coordinator of Sean Payton. I don't know what they're doing. And every time they lose to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And their offense is just dead. I know Michael Thomas is out for the year, but you still have Kamara and Chris Olave, who's really, really good. I know a lot of people are not watching the Saints right now, but Olave is good. The fact that they're not playing Jameis, it's just – it doesn't make any sense to me, especially after all that hype in the preseason. It's just confusing.
There's an old Belichick quote. There are 32 teams in this league. 20 of them are not trying to win the Super Bowl most years. 8 actually have a chance of winning a Super Bowl most years. That's the Saints were not trying to win a Super Bowl this year.
Did you watch the game in Munich?
I did. I got up early. It was on. I was scrolling Twitter. It was entertaining. The NFL wants to do a division in Europe. That's the long-term play. They want to do two teams in London, a team in Germany, somewhere else in mainland Europe. They want to do a whole division.
I would hate that. But, dude, these international games, they're fucking awesome. Like, the crowd is great.
Yeah.
And somebody asked me yesterday, he said, would you rather have a team overseas in Europe or have a Super Bowl there 1 year or every 5 years? And my answer was, I would rather play a Super Bowl overseas. I do not want a team in Europe, man. It's just like the whole concept.
The logistics are bad. The logistics are bad.
Oh, they're going to be training in New York or somewhere like on along the coast, and then they're just going to fly to London every week. I just don't like it. I hate it. But I do love these international games, especially this year. Like, we've had some really good international games. That Giant Packer game was great. Seattle and Tampa Bay was great. Germany. First of all, that Allianz Arena, that is a fucking gorgeous stadium.
Yeah.
And I'm a professional stadium evaluator, if you didn't know. I know a good stadium when I see one. That Allianz Arena is fucking beautiful, man. Especially at night when it lights up red. I don't know if you're a big soccer guy, but
Yeah. Yeah, I have a Bayern jersey on my rack. I'm looking to my left now.
There you go. I actually have family in Munich, and they always are like, they live very close to that stadium. And they were like, dude, there are so many NF people that wanted to go watch that game. Like, there's obviously a base there for the NFL, clearly. I hope they continue to play more international games. I loved it. It was a great atmosphere. I always love the 9:30 games. Love them.
Yeah.
I really hope they don't go back to playing international games at 1 o'clock. Keep those games at 9:30. And we have one more in Mexico City next week. But, dude, it was great. The atmosphere was great. And the game got really good in the fourth quarter.
I do think it sucks that Tom Brady's also good at Twitter, unfortunately. Yeah. I don't know if you saw that tweet. I don't know if you saw the tweet or not, but someone tweeted the highlight of him of the ball getting intercepted. And he quote tweeted and said, if I got free, I was Randy over the top. But it sucks Tom Brady's good at Twitter too.
Yeah. Vikings Bills, obviously game of the year.
Great
right?
game.
That was a Joe Pisarcik moment for the Bills, right? Like when he fumbled, like that's basically what Pisarcik did essentially, you know? One of the most – I'm actually going to rewatch that game. I mean, NFL Network's going to play it all week. Because I was watching the Giants, I was keeping an eye on it. I'm actually going to sit down and watch that game. I saw the catch by Justin Jefferson.
That's my guy. That's the best receiver in football. That is the best receiver in football to me.
Forget about – that was one of the most amazing
– catches ever.
No, things I've ever seen in my life. like in regards
birth of
to
a
sports,
child, car accident, no. Jefferson catch.
In regards to sports, that was the most that was not human like.
No,
for like it's like he went up with one hand, and then I saw the other angle of it. Like when I first saw, it, I'm like, oh, that's just a nice fuck. Wow, amazing catch. I didn't even know it was fourth down, by the way. But I was like, oh, okay. That was a fucking awesome catch. Diggs did it earlier in the game too. Yeah. Awesome one-handed catch. Then I saw the replay and I'm like, holy, what the? Like, I was like, is this real? How is that possible? He basically took the Odell catch and the Julian Edelman catch in the Super Bowl and combined it into one. It was fourth down too. That was an amazing catch. Josh Allen, I do think the conversation of them missing Brian Daboll needs to be brought up, because he throws some really – he's cost them the last two games, if you think about it.
Yeah, no, the turnovers are bad. I mean, he's playing with the shitty elbow that I know he got hurt in the Jet game. If he's out there and he's, you know, if he's compromised, that's one thing, but that's decision-making stuff. You know your arm's not great. Hold on to the ball. There's nothing like that last 30 minutes of red zone in the 1 o'clock window where you get the one really good game that's chaotic and then a bunch of other games that are really close. Like, that's what I would ask for. Like, you know how you get a last meal on death row? I would just ask for 30 minutes of the witching hour. I wouldn't ask for a last meal. I would ask for them to give me Scott Hansen for 30 minutes.
Why do you think other networks don't do this? Like, what? I mean, not networks, excuse me, like leagues. Like, why doesn't the NBA have this?
The NBA is experimenting with that. They have a show that's similar. They only do it a couple days a week on NBA TV. The ESPN is experimenting with this for the NHL, and it's only on their streaming service. And baseball has this. They have MLB Beginning. But none of those sports matter as much as football. That's the thing. Everybody plays fantasy football. Fantasy gambling on football, people bet on football more than any other sport. And football is America's sport now. This is just.
But I feel like college football should have this because there's so many.
ESPN has tried to do that, but it's on one of the premium cable packages that not a lot of people have. And because ESPN doesn't have the rights to the SEC and the Pac-12, and they don't have the first choice, that's where it gets into the issue. Because red zone is through the NFL. That's why the NFL is able to do it.
Yeah. I think if you rank the top 10 inventions,
Red zone's up there.
Oh, yeah. We talk about telephones and sliced breads and, you know.
You just rip the bread off. I can't watch all 12 games at one time.
Like the light bulb. It's like, hey, you ever heard of a match? Like, yeah, red zone is fucking amazing. I don't know what I do in my life. I live in D.C. and I hate DirecTV. Actually, the previous home I lived in, I couldn't get DirecTV. So the guy was like, I was like, so what am I supposed to do? He's like, you can't get DirecTV. You know, you have to go get a different cable. I'm like, oh, shit. But, yeah, I love the red zone. And obviously Sunday Ticket, I have that too with the streaming, which sucks, by the way.
Yeah.
DirecTV has completely punted on their final year of having DirecTV. Like, it's just so bad. It didn't work the first couple weeks, by the way. Like,
I remember seeing that. Yeah.
It just didn't work. Like, you could, and the thing was, you would call DirecTV. First of all, you'd be on hold for like a half hour, then the guy would pick up and he's like, okay, try reseal. He'll like reset your. He tried to reset my password, and it was like, the password's not working. I'll tell him the password you gave me is not working, and he would go like, well, I have to escalate this. You're gonna have to wait 72 hours. I'm like, what the fuck?
You know, I just like watch football, bro. Yeah, I just want to watch football.
It's fucking 2:30. You know, the Giants are down 14-10 to the Panthers. You know, I'm trying to watch this game, like. It was a mess, but they've completely punted. It's still way behind. Like they're not even trying anymore.
That's the only peril of streaming. I'm a streaming only person in my room too. So you're a couple seconds behind the timeline. If I'm actively watching a game, I will put my phone down so I don't get it spoiled for me.
I am a YouTube TV guy. I do have that. So when I'm on the road, I can, it's the easiest way to watch television when you're on the road.
Yeah.
I fucking love YouTube TV. I do like, and it's not that far behind. Like yesterday, I had the red zone on the YouTube TV, and I had the Giants game on the TV because it was on TV in this area. And like when I would go to red zone, like it was literally like a 2 second lag. That's it.
That's pretty good.
It is. It was really, really good. I was really, really impressed. All right, that was we really went around the world on that one with the NFL.
Yeah, we literally went around the world.
Yeah. So the Giants 7-2. Next up, the Lions, obviously, and everyone's in the back of their mind. They're thinking about Thanksgiving. It's such a huge game, but this is a trap game for the Giants coming up. Lions are no joke. I'm actually happy they beat the Bears because they've won two in a row, And, you know, they're not that, they're not one of those teams that play hard and everyone's like, they're due for a win, you know, because they won two in a row. So I'm a little bit at ease, but it is definitely a trap game for the Giants.
Oh, 100%. 100. That's the exact kind of game they lose in years past because they're not totally sharp. They're not totally focused. Take care of business, please. This is another bring your lunch pail, put your hard hat on, go take care of business. Detroit is beatable.
I agree. And it's at home.
Yeah.
I love the 42-degree windy MetLife games.
Yeah.
Fucking great, man. Anyways, we'll be back later in the week to break down the Lions. Nick, this is episode 2 for you filling in, right?
Yes, sir.
It's been fun, man. We'll continue to do it. Any last words?
Enjoy your week. Don't be stressed. The Giants should take care of business this week.
There you have it. Thanks, folks. We'll see you later in the week. Peace.